we're coming up on the third anniversary of that assault on the Gaza Strip, which began in July 2014. And my colleague Dan Cohen and I were inside the Gaza Strip in August to document the final stage of the assault. It lasted for 51 days, and we saw the most intense violence Israel has ever wielded against the armed factions in the Gaza Strip and the civilian population, basically under a military doctrine that targets the civilian population in order to demoralize it and turn it against its leadership, which is the Islamist faction known as Hamas, which was elected in 2006. So the conditions 3 years on are not only kind of ignored by the world, which is now focused on Syria and on so many other regions of conflict around the world, we haven't really seen any reconstruction take place. And we saw thousands of homes destroyed, including an entire neighborhood east of Gaza City, Shujaiya, which is one of the most densely populated areas on Earth. People have been attempting to make a mass exodus from the Gaza Strip because the conditions are so bad, but they're not only under siege in a situation where they're unable to import goods without the permission of Israel's military authorities, they're unable to leave. It's very difficult to leave. And so you see a brain drain. The intelligentsia is often able to leave. Young people are able to obtain visas to study abroad. But the common person in the Gaza Strip is simply stuck there. And so you see a situation of not PTSD, but continuous traumatic stress disorder among the youth, among a majority of youth in the Gaza Strip, addiction to tranquilizer drugs and the kinds of things that can be acquired through the Sinai Desert is rising. Suicide is rising. And the Israeli military and the intelligence apparatus in Israel is sort of preparing itself for yet another assault. Basically, the point of these assaults is to tighten the cage on the people of the Gaza Strip until they finally turn on their leadership, which has continued to call for an end to the occupation and to accept a leadership that will work with Israel's military and kind of accept occupation and control the Palestinian population from the inside. And so far, the Gaza Strip hasn't capitulated. So it's a very, very not just a disturbing scenario, but a depressing scenario. And I think it's really difficult to make a film that people can watch that conveys the reality inside the Gaza Strip, because it's almost impossible to lay your eyes on.
Well, in addition to the 2,200 Palestinians who were killed in that 2014 offensive against Gaza, over 100,000 homes were destroyed. And in terms of the rebuilding effort or lack of, because of the blockade, there's not access to basic rebuilding materials. I think cement and basic materials to help actually just rebuild the structures, the houses, that hasn't even been able to happen.
Right. I mean, after the 2008-2009 assault on the Gaza Strip, known as Operation Cast Lead, people in Gaza began rebuilding their homes with mud because it was impossible to obtain cement. At this point, families have just kind of converged and are living sometimes 30 to a home. And what our film does is we not only show the assault and what it was like, just how massive the violence was. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of tank shells, missiles, bullets from infantry soldiers, mortars just raining down almost every day. And just spending several days under the bombing was one of the most terrifying experiences I'd ever experienced. But also what it was like afterwards, just the deprivation, what it does to average people. We entered the home of someone who was a fisherman in the Shati camp, which is a beach refugee camp. Most people in the Gaza Strip are refugees from what is now Israel. They can't return to Israel precisely because they're not Jewish, and they would upend the Jewish demographic majority that Israel relies upon to call itself a Jewish state. So they're simply packed into refugee camps inside Gaza and elsewhere. And this man hadn't worked for years, and he just sat in his home as rain poured in through his roof and told us how he struggled to feed his kids, how they experienced hunger pains every day, and how he wished that he could commit suicide, but he can't because his wife has left him because he's penniless. And if he commits suicide, his kids will have no one to take care of them. And that was the only thing keeping him alive. And that was incredibly common across the Gaza Strip. And this is someone who had the ability to go out and fish, who knew how to farm, knew how to raise animals, who built his house with his own hands, but you know, couldn't pay for anything because there's simply no economy in the Gaza Strip. And so it's that kind of deprivation that Israel's relying on to try to turn people against its government and to basically accept the kind of occupation that we see prevailing in the West Bank, where the Palestinian Authority is in control and where it does act as a subcontractor on behalf of the occupation, arresting Palestinians for resisting, arresting them for protesting on behalf of the Israeli military.